This is the Living in America, Living in Post-Christian America podcast. I should write it down, and then I won't stumble over the name of the podcast. This is our last one, I think we're doing. And Lance just came by and said, hey, we should do this. A friend of mine said, you should talk to Lance. I'm like, yeah, we should. That'd be fun. So thanks for coming into my little radio studio, Lance. I wanted to talk on this last one about living in post-Christian America and this weird thing, maybe. I don't know if it's just me. I've asked around a little bit. I don't think it's just me. I think I'm growing up. Like, I'm actually growing in prayer, which I've never done before in my life. Prayer has always been this real area of embarrassment. And Lance was saying that's true for you too. Mm-hmm. Like, oh boy, I hope nobody asks if I journal or have a daily quiet time with a journal or if I do that. It's always been really bad. But in the last year or two, getting better at it. And I'm growing up. Like, I have an increased hunger for God's truth revealed in Scripture at deeper levels. I heard one description of it from a rabbi, but he was talking about how it's like you're building you can have a one-story ranch you can live in, and that's cool, and it's a good place to live. But there can also be a skyscraper occupying the same square footage in terms of, you know, two dimensions. Mm-hmm. But there's depth upon depth upon depth upon depth. And still, that first story is all true, but man, there's so many other levels of truth. And I'm growing in that, I feel like, understanding the Old Testament, all that stuff, understanding who Jesus is, understanding the kingdom. I think I'm growing in that. And I say all this because here's our culture dominating, oppressive in some ways in terms of how it occupies our minds. It's everywhere. It's constant. It's a barrage. It's media. It's entertainment. It's all that. It's tech. And yet, I don't think I'm the only one who's suddenly growing up a little bit. I think there's some other people that's happening too. And I mentioned that on my radio show, and I've gotten that response from people, like, not everybody. Have you noticed anything like that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. No.
Really?
No question. There is a lot of encouragement, I think, you know, that...
You feel like there's, like, people are individually drawing closer to God, like...
Yeah, you know, hunger. It's not all terrible, you know?
No.
It's like, no. And I think actually coming out of COVID has been good, because I'm not saying coming out of COVID has been... I'm saying COVID as terrible, and man, laments for people that die. I mean, come on.
Right.
Absolutely. But coming through that experience has caused a lot of leaders and a lot of churches to say, wait, I don't want to come out of this and just start going back to doing the same thing we were doing and getting the same results. Making a big church or making a church that has a cool Sunday morning and just doing that. No, look, if we don't make genuine followers of Jesus, what's the use?
Okay, I want to get back to that in a second. Like, well, let me ask you that question again about individuals. Like, and I know they're individuals too, but not thinking about churches per se, or models or paradigms,
right?
But just, do you notice
a stirring in
individuals? People, you know, like I'm learning more, I'm growing more, I'm praying more, I'm caring more about my neighbors.
Yeah.
I'm like that God's growing some of us up.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, man, I definitely hear a lot of that. Yeah, absolutely hear a lot of that. And I think it's a Holy Spirit thing, you know.
I hope there's
a movement, you know.
Wouldn't it be awesome?
refreshing. Yeah.
I remember, I can't remember who was saying it, but just talking about it doesn't take that many people to make a big difference in the neighborhood.
No,
we were talking about the neighborhood.
But in any culture, you know, and that's that thing, I think Malcolm Gladwell talked about it in The Tipping Point. It's that diffusions of innovation, which really means that it only takes 16% of any given populace, whether it be an organization or a city or what. It only takes 16% to change it, which is mind-blowing, because we usually think, no, you got to get the majority. No, you don't, because of what happens within a culture as it moves forward. 2.5% of any given culture are the innovators, and then 13.5% are the early adapters. So that 16% starts influencing others. So early adapters will influence an early majority. People that are kind of like, they get an idea pretty quick, but they got to have a little bit of information. Then you go over the bell curve and there's 34% are late majority. They're the ones, hey, I need more information. But it's the one that's next to them is the one that does the influence. So you don't have to go in and convert 65% of the people on a new idea. Really 16% we'll make it happen like yeast.
And that is really interesting. That can be applied to a lot of different ideas, innovations, marketing ideas, like in just general. Imagine though that what you have isn't just a marketing idea. It's the thing that deep down everybody actually wants.
Right.
That gives them goosebumps.
But they don't know they want it.
They don't know they want it.
That's the whole Steve Jobs.
Their hair stands on end when they see it.
So let me ask you. So do you, okay, so think about this. Now, I'm a little older than you, which you remind me of all the time.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well,
so
you are.
I appreciate it.
Still young and vibrant. And then you.
And I'm.
It's all right, dude.
See my day. That's all right. I have my day, right? So, I mean, I definitely remember eight tracks. I mean, I had an eight track player in my first vehicle.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Cool.
Whoa.
All right. Okay.
So I had to sit around and I had to wait 20 minutes for Already Gone to come back on and cycle around. It drove me nuts. So then cassette tapes came, and cassettes were like, oh man, this is great. You know, this is great. And that was, those took off really pretty quick and just killed eight tracks and it dominated for a long time. So here's my question for you. Do you remember the first time you ever heard of or saw a CD?
Yes.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What this psychedelic translucent look, what?
Yeah. Blew me away.
But it was like, that's not going
to
catch.
I never thought it would filter down to me.
Yeah.
I was like, well, this is something that audiophiles will be.
Yeah, but that's not going to become normative.
Do you remember the first CD you bought?
Yeah, it's probably some worship music. By that time, I was following Jesus. So I think I do. I actually do, because I remember the first CD player my wife and I bought, and it had the stacks and everything. And man, I'm like loading it up with Vineyard Worship and stuff.
Huh. I'm not proud of this. But my brother up and joined the army out of nowhere, and so he gave me his stuff. So I had a lot of clothes, cool clothes, that were a little too small for me. And then also, he let me have a CD player, and he was an early adopter. And I don't know how he got it, because neither one of us had any money at all. But I was like, sweet. So I went out and bought a CD, and the only one that was even at the store, I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was, I don't know.
This is your disclaimer?
Well, yeah, I went to Venture somewhere. I don't know if you remember that store.
Venture? Oh, yeah. I can still see the black and white.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I got Richard Marx.
I'm sorry.
No, I did. It's like the only one. I was like, this is, they're all terrible.
What was his big song, Richard Marx?
Should've known better.
Oh, God. And you should have known better.
Yes, I should have. And then hold on to the night.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the big hair.
Yeah,
and,
sorry about that.
Yeah.
And then I got Bruce Hornsby, which everybody bought.
Okay.
When they had
Bruce,
a CD.
Yeah. Now, we're,
that such a
now
rich,
we're getting somewhere.
Okay. So anyway, CDs, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
So technology like that, you know, it's like some of it's like it, but it does. It takes those audio files and it, which you're like, you're trying to actually change an entire culture that they're going to buy into. And you're going to replace everything.
Jettison and all of their existing equipment. Who's going to do that?
Right. It's like, come on. You're biting off something huge to try to pull this off. But it happens. But you can't go in and say, I have to convert. It'd be overwhelming. You can't convert the majority. No. And those companies that are innovators like that, they're just trying to convert a small amount of people to buy into their... So like Amazon... I mean, you remember when Amazon first started?
Mm-hmm.
It was books.
It was a profit losing bookstore.
For a year. Right, right, right. But this is where you get books. But Bezos, he had world domination on his brain back then. He knew where he was going, taking this thing.
So the striking thing about this again, though, is like that's just with an idea. And I believe that since we're all made in God's image, we all resonate. I know people resonate with the kingdom. They don't know that it's the kingdom. When they see themes of it.
Yeah. Or when they taste fruit of it.
They taste the fruit of it. They see themes. So I liken it to, I always use example, like the Olympics opening ceremonies or something. All these different nations gathered together. People are standing in unison. Like all of this, like, why is this giving me goosebumps?
Right.
Why does a song, like it can be a tech song. It'd be like EDM. It could be a country song, it could be a worship song, but that establishes a theme and then breaks down and then rebuilds it, modulates on it, goes up, repeats it, brings it all back together. People are like, yeah, I got to stand up and I'm crying.
Right.
Why? They don't know. Like all of this is this redemption loss, this thing, people coming together. They see, why is it when Ellen or Oprah brings some nobody on the stage and gives them a new house or whatever, or they make a celebrity serve somebody who's right. just a cook.
Yeah.
And we're all like, that's awesome.
There's something.
Why?
Innately.
People innately.
In us as humans.
You can say you're not a believer or not.
Right.
But you still recognize something's deeply good about this extreme home makeover type stuff.
Yeah, right.
This family's had a
altruism
rough go. This poor woman, she lost her son, and now we're going to replace it. Now look at your new house.
Right. Most people aren't watching that going, why didn't I get the house?
No.
You know, what? No, it's like, man, I'm good for them.
Finally. And
it's
restoration. It's the script flipped over. It's the upside down kingdom.
Right.
It's all of that, like, people resonate with it because deep down, I believe that they do believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
We can be in various states of denial. It's a psychological thing that we do. But deep down, people know.
Yeah, yeah. Most
can't
people that call themselves atheists or agnostics at worst.
Right? Yeah, but that's a different subject for a different time.
Exactly.
But deep down, we recognize.
Right.
So we're not talking about just an idea that like that things sound better. It's like, this is the deepest narrative that everybody's mm-hmm. hoping is true.
Right.
And why can't that take root with just a few people actually seeking God?
Right.
I believe it can and will. But that's what's heartening to me. And I asked about the individual thing. Let's get back to what you were saying about. I'm a little incredulous or a little, I don't know, about churches. Did anything change in COVID with people saying we're not going to do business as usual anymore?
There are some. I mean, because that's kind of my wheelhouse, you know.
I mean,
that's really, I work with lots of churches and across many denominational lines and seminaries.
But existing organizations we have to decentralize.
Listen, first of all, here's what I'm seeing a lot of. So it's almost an extreme one way or the other. So, and this is mega churches, multi-site churches, down to just individual churches and stuff. And here's what's interesting is, you know who Neil Cole is? Okay, so Neil came out with a little video, I mean like February or March of 2020 when everything was getting shut down. And he did this, he said, hey, I'm just going to put out my kind of prophetic, here's what I think's going to happen. And Neil's not some, you know, wacko.
Right.
I mean, he's very solid. And so he says, here's what I feel like is going to happen. He says, there's going to be three kind of churches come out of this deal. Now, this is March of 2020. He said, there will be a group of churches that are small and have little strength, and they're just going to dissolve. They're just not going to be able to hold it together.
Uh-huh.
They're not going to figure out a way to hold it together. There's going to be another group of churches that are going to go online. They're going to really tech it up. They're going to figure it out. They're going to double down and put on a good
production.
Online production and hold it, you know, hold the line. And then they're going to come out and they're going to go at it, what they were doing before.
Yeah.
Then there's going to be a third type of group of churches that are going to hold it together, but they're going to discover something in the midst that micro expressions are really where the real life of the church is, while still maintaining a macro kind of mothership type of a deal, but we flip the script and say, no, the real life is in the small. And they're going to come out of this and have held together enough strength and capacity to get it back together and get going. But it's almost like the red pill. They'll be like, we don't want to go back to the way it was. I'm seeing that happen now. I'm seeing it happen. So, like, I mean, I'm talking to pastors of huge churches, like in Chicago and different big cities. They're going, "Yep, that's what we're doing." Our people discovered something primal that goes back to the Book of Acts, and they don't want to go back to the primary thing we do is just a Sunday morning big show, and then we might be in a small group. No, they want to flip the script and say, "No, the organizing principle of our church now is our micro expressions, whether we meet in bars or we meet in neighborhoods or we meet in homes or whatever. And yes, we do still come back together, maybe every week for a big celebration service or maybe bi-weekly or monthly or whatever, but we can't go back to the way it was because we discovered something about us as the people of God that we just can't unknow."
And they're genuinely dismantling things. Is anybody dismantling anything?
Listen, there is a, and I'm not even going to name the place or whatever, But there is a there's a major American city of a church of 10,000 attendees that about a year ago, they said, we're dismantling the whole thing.
Why can't you say that? Who that is? It's a secret?
Yeah, it's a, you gotta buy the, you gotta get the Patreon version.
I'm trying to remember if I heard about that. Yeah. I don't think I did.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people haven't, but so yeah, no, it's legit. It's legit. So it's,
that's so rare. Cause you usually have to retrofit everything. If you're going to, we'll make some changes. We got to keep the thing.
Yeah. We got to keep the thing. No, they came back and they go, hey, look, we can, our best shot at changing our city is by dispersing our people. Now they're still training them. They're still, I mean, there's an organization there,
cool.
But they're like going, look, the best use of our money and our strength is not to have this gigantic campus that we're using 3 hours a week. And we're spending 90% of our resource and our energy to pull off something really cool for an hour and 20 minutes a week. No, our best use as leaders is for us to equip the folks to do the works of service throughout our city, mm-hmm. and neighborhoods, and spend every time, all of our time helping them discover their gifts, their strengths, their voices, and empowering them to do those things. That's our best use. They have done it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that. I hope this is a movement. I hope this is what's happening. And I also think, because I believe God's good and he's merciful to us, that if that is happening, If some of us are drawing closer to him or leaning in ways we didn't before growing up, and that sort of change is happening at church levels and community levels, people's lights are coming on for people, that's, he's preparing us for something.
Yeah.
And it might not be what we want. I happen to believe that things are weird in our culture right now, and they're going to get a lot weirder. And I've been saying that on the air. And I know that can freak some people out. And I'm saying it like Neil Cole. Like I'm not speaking into the future.
Right.
But just as someone who studies history and is interested in human psychology and how people work and sociology, like societies don't exist without trust.
Yeah.
They cannot hold together without trust. We don't have any trust. We don't trust each other. We don't trust what we see on the news.
Very
we don't
suspicious treat, culture. Trust.
Yes.
Very suspicious
we
culture.
We have eradicated it. Things do not cohere. So they're going to get weirder.
Yeah.
And I say that I'm not fearful, but I do happen to think that if that is happening, like God's leading us somehow to lean in and grow, like that's to be ready for that future and be a blessing in the midst of that. He always wants us to be like a signpost, or he wants us to be his kingdom. In the midst of things, he's always wanted that to be a blessing to the world.
Yeah.
And this is, I just kind of see that
you
coming.
You made me think of something that Michael Frost says. He talks about, he says, like movie trailers.
Uh-huh.
He says, we're basically to be movie trailers of the kingdom of heaven.
I believe that.
You know, so, you know, it's like you go to a movie and you're sitting there and before the main,
uh-huh.
what you went there to see comes on, you know, there's five or six previews come on. And so as you're watching that, you know, if you're with someone, you kind of lean over and go, oh man, I want to see that,
uh-huh.
you know, or you're like, eh, uh-huh. I don't want, you know, that's what we are in our everyday walking around world. And is that we should be living a questionable, and this is once again, goes back to Michael Frost. He goes, we should be living questionable lives.
Uh-huh.
And this goes back to that 1 Peter 3, people should be asking us,
Why
are you at peace?
Why the joy? What's up with the hope?
What is it? And which is, and then it's, we're like a movie trailer. They're like, the more we talk, they're like, well,
yeah.
I want to see more about that.
I've used that exact phraseology to talk about the work of cure and Jesus' healings. It's an advanced trailer of the kingdom in its fullness.
It is.
A healing, we get a picture, like everything's gonna be restored, all things made new, the lame will leap like deer. It says in Isaiah, you know, the deaf will hear.
Mm.
Ears will be like, so a healing is a glimpse, like more to come, but the kingdom's here.
Yep.
And I feel that way about when we're actually doing our thing. I was trying to explain that with cure. So we're doing these healings and with surgeries, but telling the families they're not cursed, they're loved, telling them about Jesus, like give them a glimpse. This is to the world an advanced trailer of what's to come, what's here through
us. Right. So, but now, if on the other spectrum, if we're putting all of our hope in politics, or we're putting all of our hope in all this other stuff, I mean, it's like,
what's that?
Another voice. We're just a,
I mean, it's trailer of hell.
Exactly. Exactly.
Isolation.
No.
Gritting.
Yeah.
It's grinding of teeth.
And like you said, like these verses you're talking about are in Psalm 23. It's like this lovely green pastures, quiet waters, you know. This talking about the kingdom, you know, the child will play on the adder's den, you know, and the lion and the lamb will lay together. This is the kingdom.
So let's give an advanced trailer of that. People should see that in us. There's something different. There's something lion and lamby going on here. There's a peace. Well, Dallas Willard said the most important thing in life is what you pay attention to.
Mm.
Like that will determine your future. That determines who you're becoming. And God's very interested in who you're becoming.
Right.
So my future is determined on what I'm putting my mind on.
Right.
And I'm just now learning that. So I thought this was really helpful, and I'll mention this. I saw Frank Labaugh, I think his name was, but he was really big in the literacy movement.
Oh, yeah.
So he did an experiment where he's like, I want to bring God to mind every minute.
Yeah, every minute, right.
Now,
what was the name of that book, Minutes?
Oh, I forgot. Minutes?
No, it's something about minutes. Game with minutes or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Really interesting. But like, how can we integrate in this busy, ridiculously loud culture? How can we bring God to mind? Because we will forget.
Right.
We forget things. We just do. That's how we are.
Yeah.
How do we do that? And I saw suggestions literally like down to, well, if you hit a red light, use red lights as your trigger to go, I'm going to spend the next minute talking to God.
Right.
But you plant these little signposts and triggers throughout your daily life that make you attend to him. And we were watching, have you seen Steisel?
No.
Oh my goodness, it's great. I think it's on Netflix or Amazon. It's a show about Hasidic Jews in modern day Jerusalem.
Oh yeah. I've heard about that.
Oh my goodness.
It's
brilliant and charming and dramatic, and it's incredible. But it's so interesting to be reminded of how they put signposts in their life to bring them back to God. Whenever they would take a drink of water, before they take a drink, it's like to God, you know, the creator of the universe, the provider of the water of life, whatever. They've got this little thing that they say. Now that can become legalistic, but one great scene, Lance, is when they have this woman she's a believer, and she is put in a place of being a nanny housekeeper at a modern, you know, Israeli's family.
Uh-huh.
And she wants to be hip and cool like they are, but the lady offers her a drink. So she grabs a drink, and as she's lifting it to her lips, she's like, and glory to God, the creator of the universe, and we provide a lot of water of life really quick. And she's like, what did you say? But it's like, that makes you so distinctly different.
Yes.
All those things are given to us to make us
distinctly
different. They're compelling.
They are compelling.
And it's very compelling to watch that and go, these people are, they are determined in the midst of this culture to retain this distinctiveness because of who God is.
Everything you're saying there, it reminded me of this quote. I had to look it up. I didn't want to butcher it. And it's a quick quote, but Abraham Heschel,
uh-huh.
You ever read his stuff on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
His book, The Sabbath, is a classic. It's just great. So he's this Jewish rabbi back in the day, and 20th century. So he said, the task of life is to face sacred moments.
Huh.
Okay, now that's a micro thought. It's like, no, every day I want to wake up, I want to face sacred moments today. And you don't know where they're going to pop up. And it's even like you said, when she put the bottle to her, and just saying there's something sacred about that.
But you have to bring that, though.
You have to bring that and enter into it and accept the invitation that the Lord offers for it. And it can pop up at any time, but it certainly will pop up every day if we're looking for it. But if we're living in our minds and our heads, we're living in just, oh, no, this world is what I see on the surface, and it's run by politics, and it's run by all this, you know, fear-based ideology and voices and everything, you're not going to face those sacred moments. You're not going to even hear them.
Uh-uh.
You're certainly not going to see the cues to step into them. You're not going to see the signs that the Lord's offering. It's gonna get all muted. It's going to get blurred.
It's,
and we're going to miss it. And then we're going to go, oh, well, this Christian thing, this walk with the Lord, why has my walk with the Lord become so dull? Yeah. When it was so vibrant early on, you know, and then we start, restore my first love. It's like, no, it's a day-to-day thing that can be an adventure and can be exciting. We can face sacred moments.
I'm fixing my mind on him, and I have to do that.
Yeah.
And this is stuff that, honestly, even this type of talk a few years ago for me was just one of being guilt.
Yeah, and it's
it's not guilt. I know more people, including me, who are more about Sabbath. I'd never been before, ever. I just, to me, it was just guilty. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, well, we don't need to be doing that anymore. And now I'm like, creating some space is everything.
Yeah, you start learning that Sabbath, it's not a have to, it's a get to.
It is totally a get to.
It's this.
Well, all of this, you know, all this stuff we've been talking about, that's a surprising thing about all the stuff we've been talking about, all these podcasts, is there's a funness to what we're saying.
Yeah.
To be free from all this anxiety, to be freed to do stuff for your neighbors, to care about them, to love them. Yeah. There's a fun. There's a way of life here.
An adventure. I mean, you know, I'm not being corny here. Like, it's like, you know, paragliding or something, you know. This is a day-to-day adventure that there's just this serendipitous divine encounters that you never know where they're going to happen.
It becomes a give and take with God, like in real time.
Yeah.
Like even with your money, like you can, instead of being legalistic about it, it's like, I have money I can give away on a moment's notice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if you don't do this. So my wife and I do this. I mean, we keep some cash.
Where?
In my wallet, you know. So okay.
Where do you put your wallet at night?
I have been staying with you last. Let me check my wallet. Hey.
Sorry, go ahead.
So my wife and I both, we have this deal. We each try to keep a $100 bill in our wallets.
Ah, yeah.
You know, and it's like, you never know what's going to happen.
Isn't that fun?
It's amazing. And it's just always, I want to be listening to the whole, and so, I mean, I can sit here and tell story after story of what I've done with $100 bills.
Yeah, awesome. You have stories.
So one night, I go down to this little grocery store that's near, it's like the closest grocery store to where we live. So, do you remember Piggly Wiggly's?
Uh-huh.
Which is almost embarrassing to say that.
Well, that's a Texas thing, I think.
No, it's not just a Texas thing. It's a Southern thing. So, we live in Florida, and so there's these little Piggly Wiggly's, these little independent little...
Okay.
You know, I mean, they don't even take the products out of the box. Okay. You know, you just...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, so I went up there late that night to grab something, and I just... When I walked in, I saw this young man sitting outside. There's like a little picnic table. And this is late at night. I mean, they're getting ready to close. It's like 10 o'clock at night. And it's off this highway. And I see this young man sitting on this picnic table. I see his backpack. He just caught my eye when I walked in. While I was in there getting things before I cashed out at the register, he had asked one of the gals that was working there if he could use the phone, their phone. Mm-hmm. And so I just heard his little conversation. He told who someone was going to come pick him up. So I didn't think anything about it. And so when I walked out, I just felt in my heart, take a look at this young man. And I turned around and looked at him. And my first thoughts was, well, he's young, able-bodied. Why didn't he have a job? Blah, 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 you know? Mm-hmm. You know. But then that got canceled real quick. And I heard the Lord just say, hey, go over, pull out your $100 and ask him this question. And I don't do, Brant, you know me, I don't get religious like this. Mm-mm. But the question I was to ask him was, do you believe in God?
Hmm.
And I thought, I ain't saying that. You know, it's like, that's not, I don't do that with my $100. I don't make it that way. But anyway, so I walk up to him. I said, hey, buddy. And he's big smile on his face. Hi. You know, I said, hey, do you believe in God? And he goes, yeah, I do. And so I handed him the money, and he looks at me, he's like, what? I go, he believes in you too.
Ah, that's cool.
That was it.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's what the Lord wanted me to say.
Awesome.
He believes in you too.
Uh-huh.
And
it's a great story to have. And again, it starts with awkwardness. Again, every great story.
It does. It does. But listen.
And risk.
That $100 probably felt like $1,000 to him. But if you were to ask me when I walked off, who got the greatest gift?
Of course.
I won.
Right.
I mean, I was like, why? Because that was a sacred moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was Jesus in the least of him, of them. Mm-hmm. I encountered Jesus in that young man.
Mm-hmm.
It's those sacred moments.
Yeah, I want to have margin for that. I want to create space for that, and then see the risks that I can take, and then take them.
Yeah,
because that's cool. At the end of your life, anybody's life, you want to look back and have stories.
Yeah, you want to have those sacred moments.
Not just the voice of God got overpowered by the massive screeching engine that is our culture.
Yeah,
the noise. Like, I don't want to be that way.
Is that what we want to live for?
No way. So. This is an adventurous life. It's a good thing. Things are going to get weirder, and it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, you know? Step into it.
We don't have to be fearful, no matter what.
Amen.
And Lance, thanks for doing this. We'll do it again sometime.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Hopefully, like if you've been listening to this, we have no marketing plan, no plan at all, other than to post this somewhere. So hopefully it made you think or something, or was a blessing to you in some way. So thank you for listening to the Living in Post-Christian America podcast.